Listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Laborde, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's my favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
You know, with these podcasts, one thing we hope to do is to be able to tell some interesting stories. And boy, we got one whopper of an interesting story today, maybe one of the most interesting that we've had. It involves, it involves motherhood. It involves rescue. It involves nature. It involves passion and the goodwill of a lot of people. And I'm proud to be able to share this. With me today is Gabriella Harlemet, and she is the Olivine Marine Mammal and Sea Turtle Stranding and Rehab Coordinator. It's a big title, but one that we have somebody that's doing it. So Gabriella, do you work out of the New Orleans area?
I do. I'm based out of the New Orleans area, but my program covers the entire coastline of Louisiana. So we are responsible for all live and dead marine mammals and sea turtles across Louisiana's coast.
Okay. And there's a whole bunch of other organizations that were tied into this project we're about to tell you with her agency, I guess, would have been the lead agency. So in 2021, we had Hurricane Ida. And when hurricanes go down the Gulf, they kind of, you know, they whip up a lot of water and they move things around, especially in the rivers and in the bays. And so it's not uncommon. What you all deal with is animals who have been moved around and stranded in various places. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
And most often, I guess, it's fish, but also sea turtles. And I would think a sea turtle, it might be easier. They could just get up and walk back, you know. But for an animal, it might be more difficult. So tell us what happened with these particular, this is about dolphins, but these dolphins you're about to talk about, what happened during the hurricane?
Yeah, so these dolphins were found basically in out of habitat, which means that they cannot get back to their natural environment on their own. It was a completely closed off pond system. So there's a couple of theories. There's the theory that the mom and the baby washed in together. There's also the possibility that mom washed in pregnant and then gave birth to her calf out in this pond. So Ida was in August of 2021. We got the phone call in January of 2022. And from then, we went out, my team and I, and we scouted the entire thing. So when we go out and we scout, we're looking, first off, can I safely put people into the water? And human safety is always my first priority. And then I start looking at the animals. What are their behaviors like? What's the food in the area? What's the salinity? How deep is the pond? What kind of bottom is a pond? Things like that. Because that calf was so small, we had to hold off on an intervention for quite some time.
Let's place everybody geographically. So the call you got was that there was a dolphin. Had anybody spotted the calf yet at that time, or was it just a dolphin?
We knew it was two. We knew it was a big dolphin and a small dolphin.
Okay. And the location is that they had been, I guess it could have been like tidal surge or something, but they got carried away into a small bay near Grand Isle. Is that correct?
Correct. Right behind Elmer's Island, Grand Isle. Yes.
Okay. So they were in this bay. They were stranded in the bay. Now the water was okay. There was food and the conditions were okay. Only a little problem is that they couldn't get out.
Correct.
So what happens next?
So there's a lot of phone calls, a lot of planning. You mentioned there's a lot of agencies and there's a lot of organizations involved. It's not just five people going in. It took over 25 people, boots on the ground, to make it happen. So it's a lot of coordination with outside organizations and with our federal partners at NOAA Fisheries. So lots of conversations, lots of going back and forth on what was best for the animals. And then from there, it was continuing to monitor. We would go check on these animals 1 to 2 times a month, sometimes more, depending. So we were constantly driving down to check on this mom and calf and make sure that, you know, there's nothing pressing changing. If we saw a big drastic change, it would move up our timeline. But we had time with these guys.
So key to this was the calf, as you all call them.
Yes.
I call it a baby, okay. But anyway, the calf. What do you think? Do you think that the mother was pregnant at the time, or do you think that the calf had already been born by that time?
I'm under the impression that mom probably washed in pregnant. When we got eyes on the animal in January, it was one of the smallest animals I'd ever seen in the wild. So I think mom probably washed in pregnant.
Okay, knowing hardly anything about this, I would think so too, because if the calf had already been born, there's a good chance it would have been lost with the surge and being brought over. I mean, being pregnant is one thing, but being a calf going through all that. And so I would think she's probably pregnant. But
correct. In 2020, with Hurricane Laura in western Louisiana, we did have quite a few out-of-habitat dolphins then too. And we did have two sets of a mom and calf displaced animals, but those calves were much, much bigger. Those calves were almost too big to be still with mom.
Okay. Time to move on, huh? So, so this was a bay, and so you had this little calf and the mom. Any idea about how old the mom would be?
So the mom is actually a known animal. So we do know animals that are in Barataria Bay. Really cool thing about dolphins, their dorsal fin, that fin that's on the top, it's actually like a human fingerprint. They're all unique. They're all different. So scientists will actually go take photos of those fins to know the individual. So this was a known animal, and I believe she had been spotted in 2011 or 2012. So we knew that she was a known resident of the area. But as far as an actual age, we don't know for her. But she's been there a while.
But you're all familiar with these animals at the time then, when you see them, because of what the markings on the fin?
Correct. So we took dorsal fin photos and we sent it off to someone who has the catalog, as we call it. And he was able to make a positive match on this animal. It was the first time, I believe, she'd been seen with a calf. So not say it's her first calf, but first time that they had actually seen it.
Yeah. Had y'all given the mother a name?
We did. So my team and I were big Schitt's Creek fans. So we named the mom Alexis. I mean, I'm sorry. The mom is Moira and the baby is Alexis.
Okay.
The calf was a female.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot better than just calling it the calf, you know? And so that was, that's probably, okay. So you spot these people, these animals, and you determine that their environment is okay in terms of the water and food availability, but it's not a place they can stay forever. And so you have to make a decision. At some point, you need to move them to the Gulf.
Correct.
But the problem was the calf. And so tell us about that.
Yeah, so calf
the
was
calf
just...
Is Alexis, is that her name?
Alexis, yes. Okay. Calf is Alexis.
Alexis.
Alexis. The kid was just small, so anytime we are going into an intervention type situation, we want to make sure that both animals are going to be safe. So there is just some concerns about, due to the age, that it may not end the way that we want it to. And we want to make sure that mom and baby were both safe. And that's why we waited a little bit longer. We also had, you know, the luxury of time, and we could wait on this. If it was something, you know, where it was like, they have to get out now or they're not going to make it, we would have made a different call. But because we were able to take our time with this, we were afforded that luxury that sometimes we're not afforded at all.
Were they showing any sort of impatience or anxiety about getting me out of here? Or were they?
Oh, no. The property owners wanted the dolphins gone, but those animals had so much fish. They had so much room. I say a pond. It was really a massive area. We actually had to divide it up into calling it areas 1, 2, 3, and 4 in order to differentiate where we were talking about. I mean, these guys had a lot of room to swim in and to play in. We got to watch, you know, calf go from strictly feeding off of mom to mom then taught the calf how to forage for their own food. We got to watch feeding behavior. So in a way, we did also get to watch this calf kind of figure out how to become a dolphin.
And that was something you could never do if they were out in the Gulf somewhere, that you had them kind of contained in an area. And so you could learn also from this.
True. Yes. Yes. Yeah, this was kind of my first time, at least. I've been in this role for 8 years now, but this was my first time being able to kind of watch, you know, a small dolphin kind of grow up and learn those things from mom, and then watch them, you know, take those behaviors they learned to be able to survive in the wild.
Now, does the calf stay with the mom all the time?
They will stay with mom until they're about two and a half, sometimes 3 years old, is generally when they will start to drift away from mom.
But while they were there, I mean, when you saw them when it was still an infant, I mean, is the calf always swimming next to mom?
Yeah, yeah. So the day that we actually noticed any separation was actually that was important for us to document that and then bring that up to Noah of, hey, we saw, you know, there was distance between the mom and the kid, because usually they would surface, you know, right next to each other. And once there was, you know, mom popped up and you didn't see kid, and then you saw kid maybe 20 yards away, that was significant.
You mentioned NOAA, that's the National Oceanic and
Atmospheric Administration.
Right.
Yes.
So are they at the very top of this pyramid then, in terms of organizing all this?
Yes, we are permitted through them to do this type of work.
All right. So sometimes around June of this past year, the decision was made to go ahead with this. And it was based on, one, the assumption that that the baby's okay at the point. And so what kind of preparations had to be made for the move?
A lot. There's a lot of moving parts. We, you know, logistically, we had to figure out how we're going to get all these boats in the water, because there was no traditional boat launch in this, you know, pond area. We had to scout the route we were going to take the boats in, because it got very, very shallow in different areas. We have to pack everything. You got to bring our hospital, our little ambulance that we put our dolphins in. We have to bring all the medication if they need medication. You know, on the logistics wise, I got to bring all the life vests. I have to bring all the dive booties to make sure people are safe. We got to get the people down there. We got to coordinate where we're parking cars. As far as other equipment, there's a giant net. So we have a specialized, it's an old like type of mullet boat. So the net sits behind the boat. The engine is towards the middle of the boat, and you basically throw a ball out, and then it's like a seine net. It comes out the back of the boat. You have your float line on top, your lead line on the bottom, and that's what we use to circle the dolphins to trap them where we need them to be. So we have that type of boat and a lot of people. There's a lot of people involved, a lot of handlers, a lot of boat drivers, safety people, things like that.
Yeah, well, let me get back to that, but let me mention is that on your website, there's a brief video, like about 1 minute video, that gives you an idea of what's going on. Do you know offhand with the if somebody wants to watch it, where they go on the website?
I believe the video is on Audubon Nature Institute's social media, and it should be on the Audubon Nature Institute newsroom as well. There should be a press release with that video.
Okay, so if you listen to this, it's worth doing that. Again, it's not very long; it's just about a minute, but just to see the enthusiasm and the people that were involved in this aren't. So, and I've looked at the video several times. So when they're getting ready to move the dolphin, there's a bunch of people and they're all, the bay must have been pretty shallow, or was it the point that you had them at? Because it's like everybody's standing in the water.
So it was the point that I know exactly where you're talking about. It was our offload point. So parts of that pond system were 15 to 30 feet deep. Mm-hmm. So it was deep. But where, so that's part of our scouting. We had determined there was a shallow area with decent footing that we could get these animals out the water, into a stretcher, out the water, and move them to our van, that hospital ambulance. So where you're talking about, it was shallow footing, and that's where we ended up moving the animals there, holding them in hand is what we call it, and we let mom and kids see each other, so we do nose to nose, so they can see each other, we're not freaking out. And that was when we put a satellite tag on mom, so we'd get once a day a daily update, just making sure that mom is, you know, where she's supposed to be and isn't in any danger. And the kid got what's called a roto tag, which is basically like a cattle ear tag, and it's just for us to be able to mark them. Once they got that, they were loaded up to our van. We drove maybe 10 minutes down the road and were able to release them closest to where mom had last been spotted on photo identification surveys years prior.
Well, it's amazing the technology that y'all have. You know, in the video, there's a shot of what I would look to me, not knowing anything, like a man who was doing something on the mother's, I guess, what, the ear or the fin. And it looked like it might have been where they were attaching the whatever it is, with a transmitter.
The roto tag. Our capture lead put on the roto tag on the kid while I was putting on the satellite tag on the mom. So they're both tagged.
Okay, and so they both have it. All right. And so once you get them on there, then it's a question. Were they, once they were on that boat, were they nervous? Or did they pretty much stay together? Or?
No, they were pretty decent in hand. I mean, past the initial, you know, why are these weird things touching me? It's kind of like an alien abduction when you think about it a little bit. But they did eventually calm down in hand. And they transported beautifully in the van. Oftentimes, it's called a dry transport, even though we have water and stuff, right? They're not in water. We have big foam mats in there, and we have pump sprayers with water and towels and buckets with water to keep them cool. But sometimes they don't do too well in a dry transport situation. But they handled it really well. It was only a 10-minute transport. And then we got them straight back in the water, and they took off. They did not look back.
Up to that point, they had spent their whole life in water.
Correct. Yes, they can, you know, they're air breathers, so they don't have to be in water. But with their skin and stuff, we want to keep it cool. It's also how they thermoregulate themselves. So we make sure, you know, that was one of the things that we packed up. We had buckets and sponges and pump sprayers and towels and sheets, all the things for our animals. We have fans rigged up in the back of the van. So typically when we're doing animal transport, the staff is very cold because we have the AC blowing, we have all the fans going. Animals are great. The staff are the ones that's, you know, in sweatpants in July driving the van.
That's not a great experience for a human, just be lying down and have all these people sponging you and cooling you off and all that. Okay, I'm getting back to the dolphin in just a moment. And so we have a bit of a cliffhanger here. I want to talk about the other animals that are rescued. What has your experience been like with turtles?
Oh, I love sea turtles. Sea turtles are great. We take in cold stuns from the Northeast every year. We'll volunteer our space for that. And, you know, sea turtles are just, they're really incredible. They can go through so much, and they want to fight. They want to live. I've seen turtles that you think absolutely should not still be moving, and somehow, you know, boat strike animals that have lung exposed, and somehow they're still kicking and they're still thriving and eventually get to get released. I love sea turtles.
So you all said you have from the Northeast?
From the Northeast, yeah. So we get local sea turtles, you know, in Louisiana, strandings do happen. We certainly get our local, you know, rehab cases, but every year from the Northeast, the New England area, we will help them. They get thousands of cold stress turtles. So sea turtles are cold-blooded, right? So their body temperature is dependent on the environment around them. So when those temperatures drop, they go into hypothermia, essentially. So they will bring them into rehab, they will intake them, but then they can't treat them long term. So they start shipping them out to different facilities. And we always take turtles if asked. So last year we took 18, in 2020 we took 30. And from the 2022 crowd, I still have 4 that are in my care. So some of them are a little bit longer term rehab, but the other ones we were able to release.
So do you return them, or do they stay here forever?
No, for the rehab side of things, we always want to release. That is our number one goal, is always release, rescue, rehab, release. So we put them back in the Gulf. We usually see camps release, which call the Gulf of Mexico their home. They're born in the Gulf, out in South Texas in Mexico. We just go down to usually Grand Isle, and we'll just put them out
there.
They're
born in Texas, but they migrate to the Northeast?
They do. Sea turtles move a whole lot.
That's quite a trip right there.
It is. It is quite a trip. And they just miss that memo to go back south where it's warmer.
And just getting around Florida, the big panhandle down there, I mean, that adds, 1,000 miles to it or something. That's been...
Right. Yeah. It has to do with the migratory corridor. So southwestern Louisiana is actually a big foraging ground for Kemp's Ridleys. So typically what they have found is they're born in South Texas, northern beaches of Mexico. They will go up the coast of Texas, usually stop in southwestern Louisiana, eat, and then they just continue migrating kind of along the coastline.
You're right. Life would be a lot easier if I just stayed in Louisiana. I mean, why go down to the Northeast? We got all those whales and lobster,
right?
And all that, you know? So,
I don't know why they want to leave the Gulf. All the food, all the blue crab, and all the shrimp that they could possibly want.
Yeah. Do you know what species of turtle that is?
So those would be Kemp's Ridley sea turtles. There are 7 species of sea turtles worldwide, and 5 of them are found in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, I realize that.
Yeah.
The turtle that had those issues a few years ago that they were getting caught up in nets and all of that, has that been resolved?
Fishery interactions, they happen. So it's working with the industry to try to mitigate that as much as possible. So it does unfortunately still happen, but it's a known interaction for those species.
Yeah. What other species are there that you all have dealt with?
So we have dealt with greens and loggerhead sea turtles. And then during the oil spill, we also had hawksbill sea turtles come into rehab as well.
So you all do a lot of turtles.
We do a lot of turtles, yes.
Yeah.
We do more sea turtles than we do marine mammals, for mm-hmm. sure.
Okay. So you don't deal with birds?
We do not deal with birds, no. The zoo used to, but because of avian influenza, they had to close down their rehab program.
Have you ever seen a whale out there?
I have actually been on a necropsy, which is an animal autopsy for a whale that washed up in Grand Isle. So I've not seen a live whale out in the Gulf, but I have gotten to study deceased whales that have washed up on Louisiana.
And how about sharks?
No sharks.
Okay, well, that's good. All right, so let's get back to the boat arriving. So you're taking them to the Gulf. your pair of dolphins. And I think in that little clip, there's a scene when you get, where all of a sudden you stop somewhere, and it's like a little slide or something, and they just like scoot off of there in a hurry. It's like they don't stop and say goodbye or thank you. I mean, they're out of there.
Oh, no, so ungrateful. We do all this work. And they didn't even say thank you. No, so we drove them to a marina down in Grand Isle and used their boat launch. Basically, they were already in their stretchers. We had loaded them up in the van with veterinarians and with handlers. And we got to the release site and we offloaded them with more handlers, held them in the water, dropped the stretchers, and then it's a coordinated release. So we let mom and kid go at the same exact time. They swam right out the way we wanted them to. And they were actually spotted a few days later by some scientists in the area doing some work. So we got pictures of them about 4 or 5 days later, and they were doing great. They looked in good body condition. It was, they said their behavior was absolutely perfect, which is exactly what we want to hear.
Now the transmitter, so both of them have transmitters on attached to them?
Just the mom. We don't typically give satellite tags to the kids just because it's too big. So mom has a satellite tag on her, and every morning I get an update. It's not in real time, so you can't track in real time. I think it's like a 6 or 7 hour delay by the time we get the information, but it does allow us to make sure. I believe the threshold is 42 or 52 days post-release, it's considered a success. So basically, if these animals can make it to that threshold, then they're good to go.
So what have you learned about their travel pattern so far?
So moms hung out in the Caminata Bay area, and then they went over to Port Fouchon for quite a few days. And I think she was teaching her kids some bad habits. I think we were, at the marinas trying to get food. But then this morning they were actually back over by Grand Isle. So they moved back, but they're pretty localized. We find dolphins have very strong sight fidelity, so they're going to stay within that geographic region. So it wasn't surprising to see her go to Fouchon and come back.
So they're not going to say, let's go to Miami or something. I mean, they're going to stay around the Louisiana Bay.
No, they're going to stay in that Barataria Bay area.
Well, that's good, just to know to kind of stay close to home.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel when they were let go and when you saw them splashing in there? Were you happy or sad or?
I had a lot of relief go through my body. Happy that we got them out. You plan this for so long, and you consider every scenario about, well, what if this goes this way? What if this goes that way? And so seeing them released was just like a weight was off my shoulders of being able to help these animals get them back to where they're supposed to be. And then I just remember turning around and seeing all the people that made it happen, from so many different organizations. And it's always a great moment when you kind of get to see all these people working together for the same goal.
So what do you expect for each coming hurricane season? I mean, would it be reasonable? Like, I don't know if you were around at the time of Katrina. Was there much destruction after Katrina?
There were. I'm not sure about Katrina, just because the stranding network here was pretty much decimated. But I know for Rita, Hurricane Rita that hit, southwestern Louisiana, there were dolphins displaced from that storm. So I always tell people, just because the hurricane's not hitting the New Orleans, the southeast region, right, we're still on high alert, because any hurricane hitting the middle of Louisiana or western Louisiana can still affect what we're going to do. So I'm not really sure about after Katrina. I just think there weren't really a lot of people looking. But after Hurricane Rita in 2005, there was definitely dolphins displaced.
So after every big tropical event, I guess y'all have to go out there and kind of look and see.
Yeah. And that's been a really big thing that we have started working on, is getting more information out there of, hey, if you see this, you need to call, please call the Southeast Stranding Hotline and report it to us, because we do care, and we will go out there and take a look at it and do whatever we can.
No, you're facing, at the time that we're recording this, we're facing something kind of unusual in that the water in the Mississippi is low, and in terms of what's being drained into the Gulf. Does that present a unique problem or?
No, not so far that we've seen, or that we have noticed, at least.
Okay, well, it might be a while, but okay, well, good. Well, congratulations on your work. You all are doing something really important. It sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm there. And looking at the people that were helping you, I mean, it looks like you had a bunch of volunteers out there, or just...
Different organizations that either do stranding response in their own state. So we had some of our partners in Mississippi and Alabama come over. National Marine Mammal Foundation. We had our colleagues at SeaWorld Orlando Rescue also come in. We had vets from South Carolina Aquarium come in. It's really just it's not a one organization task. It truly takes, it's a multi-agency effort to pull any type of intervention rescue off.
Yeah, I know the Chicago Zoological Society.
Yes, they provided the satellite tag for MOM. So they get a grant every year that allows them to purchase satellite tags, and then they send them out to anyone that needs one, and they do all the tracking for us. So it's very, very nice of them to send us a satellite tag.
You just said the current tag is going to last about how long?
Generally lasts about 3 months.
Yeah.
Three-ish months.
There's going to be one day that they wake up and they say, you know, something seems a little different right now. Something seems to be missing. So that. Gabriella, thank you very much for what you do. And keep on doing it.
That's the plan.
Sounds like a fun and a fascinating job.
It's you know, I never have a boring day. No 2 days look alike, which is what I love about my job.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.